November of 2016, a handful of United States Embassy employees in Havana, Cuba, started to hear strange sounds, mostly at night. Some compared the sound to chirping crickets or to the noisy cicada that inhabit the trees by the Havana waterfront. Others report that they were woken from a deep slumber and reached to turn off their alarm clock, only to find that it wasn't ringing, but the noise was coming from all around them. None of them really knew what the sound was or where it was really coming from. Over a year later, as tensions between Cuba and the United States escalate, this undefinable sound and the subsequent damage it is said to have inflicted on the health of the U.S. Embassy employees is still a mystery. No reason, cause, or responsible parties have been identified as what is now being called an attack on American people. There are, however, a lot of theories. And while some of them read like they are taken straight out of a spy thriller or from science fiction, there's no question that the health of over 20 Americans was compromised, and the trust that was slowly starting to be rebuilt between the two countries has ground to a halt. But what's the real story behind the Havana attacks? That is what we're going to start to dig into and try to get a better picture of, starting right now. I'm Marie Mayhew, and thank you for listening to Whatever Remains. This is my inaugural episode, Sonic Attack. State Department press briefing, August 9th, 2017.
Can you tell us about the incidents that have been going on in Havana affecting U.S. government workers there?
Yes. So we are certainly aware of what has happened there. Give me one second here. And that's why we got a little bit of a late start getting some recent updates for you on this.
The woman you hear is Heather Naubert, the spokesperson for the United States State Department. This is an early August press briefing, basically updating the press on what the State Department is engaged in. It's also one of the first times that the U.S. government is acknowledging that something strange is happening in the Cuban embassy.
So some U.S. government personnel who were working at our embassy in Havana, Cuba, on official duty, so they were there working on behalf of the U.S. embassy there, they've reported some incidents which have caused a variety of physical symptoms. I'm not going to be able to give you a ton of information about this today, but I'll tell you what we do have that we can provide so far. We take the situation very seriously. One of the things we talk about here often is that the safety and security of American citizens at home and abroad is our top priority. We're taking that situation seriously, and it's under investigation right now.
If the U.S. doesn't have a definitive answer on the cause or source of the incidents, why did it ask those two Cuban embassy officials to depart the U.S.?
Look, some of our people have had the option of leaving Cuba as a result for medical reasons.
How many?
I can't tell you the exact number of that, but I can.
What was it, in the tens, dozens?
I'm not going to characterize it. I do not believe it was that large, certainly not that large. But we had to bring some Americans home, or some Americans chose to come home as a result of that.
I don't envy Naubert here. Clearly, the press senses something is not adding up, and it's not exactly normal. No real count of people affected, no information. There's not even a really good description of what really happened. The best they can collectively come up with is calling it the incident.
And how long has this been going on for?
So we first heard about these incidents back in late 2016.
And who is leading the investigation?
The U.S. government is investigating this. I'm not going to get into
what
it prior
agency?
To that. I'm not going to get into it. You know which law enforcement agencies we have that would be concerned about this. The State Department is involved, but you could check with others as well.
And just real quickly, was it just State Department employees or other employees from other government agencies?
So these were, my understanding is that it has only affected State Department employees. This has not affected any private U.S. citizens down there. We take this very seriously.
Look,
This incident. And that's what we're calling it. We don't know exactly what...
Since 2016, you don't know what this incident is?
What this requires is providing medical examinations to these people. Initially, when they started reporting what I will just call symptoms, it took time to figure out what it was, and this is still ongoing. So we're monitoring it. We provide medical care and concern to those who believe that they have been affected by it, and we take this extremely seriously. Okay, hold on. Anything else on Cuba?
Just give us a sense of, are these medical problems
ongoing, or was this a short-term thing?
And you've heard me say this here before. When we talk about medical issues about Americans, we don't get into it. So I can just tell you that it is a cause of great concern for us. It's caused a variety of physical symptoms in these American citizens who work for the U.S. government. We take those incidents very seriously, and there is an investigation currently underway.
I mean, can you say, are they life-threatening? I mean, the physical symptom wasn't death, was it?
No. It was not life threatening, and I'll leave it at that. Anything else on Cuba? Anything else on Cuba? We're done with Cuba, correct? Okay, let's go to North Korea. Hi.
Never would you think that someone from the State Department would be that relieved to move on to the topic of North Korea. But from this press conference, we know two things. One, the State Department confirms that something happened in Havana to American diplomats. And they're not ruling out that it was a deliberate planned attack that they are, as Naubert says, taking very seriously. Two, they have no idea what happened. The State Department is not just keeping this event confidential, although that may be part of it. It's an incident. They're investigating it. And that's really all we know. As early as 2016, the State Department press would release information that there were 21 medically confirmed cases of embassy workers experiencing a wide range of symptoms that could not be easily diagnosed. Depending on the source publication, there was a surprisingly wide range of physical symptoms. It started with milder headaches, nausea, fatigue, exhaustion. It escalated to extreme hearing loss, cognitive issues, trouble concentrating, dizziness, to the most extreme, traumatic brain injury, and permanent hearing loss. 2 days after the State Department briefing, the New York Times followed up with this article. The University of Miami received a nervous call from the Trump administration. American diplomats in Havana were getting sick with headaches, dizziness, and hearing loss. Washington needed answers. At least 6 patients were flown from Cuba to the university's hospital this year to determine the cause of a medical mystery that was dogging several people who worked at the American Embassy in Havana. The illness appears to be caused by some kind of sonic wave machine, and the symptoms worsened with prolonged exposure, said a person who was briefed on the situation but who was not authorized to comment. One of the patients had a more serious illness that involved a blood disorder, the person said. This month, a University of Miami specialist went to Havana to examine others who worked at the embassy because the officials were expecting that more people were affected. This episode was the latest in a series of disputes between the nations. It baffled even the most senior Cuban experts who wondered whether a rogue element of Cuban intelligence intent on ending President Obama's reconciliation efforts had pulled off an unauthorized caper, or more likely, whether a new type of eavesdropping technology had gone awry. This is very likely an installment of the long saga of spy versus spy in U.S. and Cuban relations, said Peter Kornbluth, a co-author of Back Channel to Cuba, The Hidden History of Negotiation Between Washington and Havana. The Cuban government has long harassed American government employees in Havana. Stories of feces left on diplomats' residence had become a part of Cold War lore. The power would go out and agents would tailgate diplomats' vehicles, making it impossible for them to change lanes. But the recent sickness were worse than even the standard harassment, even in the worst of times, officials said. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's the start of the mystery behind these strange attacks. Its own weird origin story. The fractured, strange, shared history between the United States and Cuba, especially surrounding its recently deceased dictator, Fidel Castro.
Marxism taught me what society was. I was like a blindfolded man in a forest, who doesn't even know where North or South is. If you don't eventually come to truly understand the history of the class struggle, or at least have a clear idea that society is divided between the rich and the poor, and that some people subjugate and exploit other people, you're lost in a forest, not knowing anything. Fidel Castro, on Discovering Marxism, 2009.
Destined to outlast 9 American presidents, Castro survived as the leader of the Cuban Socialist Revolution for over 50 years. Even after his death, Castro remains one of the most polarizing and mythic figures of the 20th century. The myths about what made Castro, Castro, have an early start. Before the 1959 overthrow of the Batista dictatorship, before Cuba became the first communist country in the Western Hemisphere, Castro played baseball. Not only did he play America's favorite pastime, but the young Castro owned a fastball that captured the attention of several big league scouts. When the Washington Senators failed to sign Castro, he turned his attention and energy to politics. Don Hoke played in the majors from 1954 to 1964, mostly at second. He was a career 265 hitter with 89 homers and 64 stolen bases. He was primarily known for his hard-nosed approach to the game. During a winter league game in 1950 or 1951, Hoke was playing for the American club in Cuba when a group of law students overtook the field. The rebellious anti-Batista students interrupted the game, led by a young law student named Fidel Castro. Castro seized the pitching mound and delivered several unscheduled pitches to Hoke himself. Reputable baseball scholars, general sports historians, numerous network news broadcasters, and even U.S. Senator Eugene McCarthy had been taken in by this grand myth of Castro as a genuine major league pitching prospect.
We aren't afraid of anything. It's very difficult to compete against us in any area. Not even in baseball do they want to compete with Cuba.
While Castro was a pitcher in Havana, there is absolutely no record that he was ever scouted by the American majors or that he even pitched against Hoke. It is worth noting that baseball itself, one of the most mythic and storied subjects, would be so closely tied to a leader that himself would eventually denounce anything having to do with America. It turns out that Fidel Castro, the baseball player, is a marvelous piece of propaganda. The only thing that maybe outlasted it was Fidel Castro, the lionized revolutionary hero.
If surviving assassination attempts were an Olympic event, I would win the gold medal.
In late 2006, Channel 4 in the UK broadcasted a documentary film called 638 Ways to Kill Castro. It's based on a book by the same name by a Cuban securities expert named Fabian Escalante. Escalante had the relatively dubious job of keeping Fidel Castro alive, and he had calculated himself that there had been a total of 638 attempts on Castro's life. Now, if you're like me, this strikes me as an extraordinarily high number. Double digits in the teens, maybe, that's even excessive, but 638? As Wayne Smith, chief of mission of U.S. interest section in Havana under President Jimmy Carter, was quoted once saying,
"Cuba had the effect on the U.S. that a full moon has on a werewolf."
And this full moon effect can really be seen in the actual documented attempts that the CIA made on ending Castro's life. They read like fiction. According to the 1967 report of the CIA's Inspector General, the Technical Services Division recalled a scheme to spray Castro's broadcasting studio with a chemical that would produce effects similar to LSD. But the scheme was rejected because the chemical was unreliable. During this period, the CIA also impregnated a box of cigars with a chemical which produced a temporary disorientation, hoping to induce Castro to smoke one of these cigars before delivering the speech. The Inspector General also reported a plan to destroy Castro's image as, quote-unquote, the beard, by dusting his shoes with thallium salts, a strong enough chemical that would cause his beard to fall out. It was to be administered during a trip to Cuba, when it would be anticipated that Castro would leave his shoes outside of his hotel room to be shined. They procured the chemical, tested it on animals, but apparently abandoned the scheme because Castro canceled his trip. A notation in the records of the Operating Division of the CIA, Office of Medical Services, indicates that on August 16, 1960, an official was given a box of Castro's favorite cigars with the instruction to treat them with a lethal poison. The cigars were contaminated with a botulism toxin, so potent that a person would die after putting one in his mouth. The official reported that the cigars were ready to go on October 7th of 1960. It was indicated that they were delivered to an unidentified person on February 1961, but then the record does not disclose whether there was an attempt made to pass on these cigars to Castro. In 1960, the CIA even took steps to enlist members of the criminal underworld, with gambling syndicate contacts, in aid to ultimately assassinate Castro. But the origin of this plot is relatively uncertain. A second plan involved presenting Castro with a contaminated diving suit. The Technical Services Division of the CIA bought a diving suit, dusted the inside of the diving suit with a fungus that would produce a chronic skin disease. They even went so far as to contaminate the breathing apparatus with botulism. The Inspector General's report states again that this plan was abandoned and the diving suit never left the laboratory. Along with the contaminated diving suit, there was even an idea on whether or not the CIA could rig a seashell to explode underwater. The brightly colored shell would be deposited in an area where Castro commonly went skin diving. He would go by it, intrigued by its color, and it would detonate. Again, this was discarded as impractical. Perhaps one of the most ironic one of these plots took place on November 22, 1963, the day that President Kennedy was shot, when a CIA official offered a poison pen to Castro in Cuba, while at the same time an emissary from President Kennedy himself was meeting with Castro to explore the possibility of improved relations. The exact number of times that the CIA attempted to assassinate Castro is really up for debate. From 1960 to 1965, there are at least 8 documented plots to assassinate Fidel Castro, with Castro himself saying America was at least behind 24 of these attempts as of 1975. The Church Committee, a 1975 U.S. Senate committee chaired by the Idaho Senator Frank Church, investigated abuses by the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and they found and actually documented the following. We have found concrete evidence of at least 8 plots involving the CIA to assassinate Fidel Castro from 1960 to 1965. The proposed assassination attempts ran the gamut from the high-powered rifle to poison pills, poison pens, deadly bacterial powders, and other devices which strain the imagination. 50 years later, could these devices that strained the imagination still be alive and well in Havana? Could the mysterious incident that baffled Heather Naubert and the State Department actually be a weapon that could target and incapacitate individuals without notice or detection? A weapon that America itself has not deployed or even has in its arsenal. But what if there's another answer? Starting with the next episode, we'll look at how Fidel Castro came to power through force and held America off until 2016, when the Obama administration worked covertly to bridge relations. We'll look at the 21 diplomats affected by this attack and try to answer who were they and why is their purpose so important. We'll look at the nature of the attacks themselves and try to understand the science behind it and what would it take to make a weapon of this nature. And we'll look at why, after all this time, 24 failed assassinations, the Bay of Pigs, an embargo that stilted Cuba's financial growth for 5 decades just as relations were mending, why would this attack take place and question who is ultimately responsible? After all, if we can eliminate the fictional and dig out the facts, maybe the story won't be so strange after all. Or maybe, at this point, the truth is just going to get weirder. That's next time on Whatever Remains. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Marie Mayhew. Thank you for listening to Whatever Remains podcast. I'm your host, Marie Mayhew. Questions, comments, want to drop me a note? Do so at marie@whateverremainspodcast.com. Or you can find me at Twitter @TeamGiantSquid. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And if the mood strikes you and you like what you're hearing, please do us a solid and throw down with a nice review. Our website will be up and running hopefully fairly soon. Whatever Remains logo and art by Desdemona. Sound effects and editing by Michael Buchanan. A special thanks to that silver tongue devil, Forrest Burgess, for all of his vocal talents. This has been a Damn It Chippy Productions. And as always, thank you, dear listener.